Public Radio KMXT is supported by a grant from North Pacific Fuel, serving and continuing the tradition of excellent service to the community at three locations: Marine Dock at 715 Shelikoff Street, Gas & Go at the Y, and Gas & Go at Mill Bay.
It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station, broadcasting from Signal Hill, here in Kodiak, Alaska, where it's 54 degrees. It's been a nice day. We're looking for more of these sunny skies. West wind to 10 miles per hour. Increasing clouds tonight with a low around 49 overnight. West wind to 15 miles per hour. Could gust as high as 20 tonight. And for tomorrow, rain, mainly after 7 a.m. High near 52 tomorrow. Southwest wind to 15, becoming southwest 20. Southeast to the 20 in the afternoon. Coming up on the midday news, there's a fire in Kodiak, and the borough has passed a budget. That and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Barbara Klein. At the ornate National Palace in Guatemala City today, Vice President Harris met with Guatemalan President Alejandro Jamate to talk about poverty, corruption, and human trafficking, factors fueling a surge in migration to the U.S. Maria Martin reports.
Guatemala's President Jamate said he and the vice president spoke about investments in the rural areas from which many migrants come, including expanding the H-2 temporary worker program to bring laborers to the U.S. For her part, Harris said her message to Central Americans is not to risk a dangerous journey. Do not come, she said. The leaders also said they had frank discussions about stopping corruption.
The vice president also said the only people who benefit from those who try to come to the U.S. illegally are so-called coyotes. At the same time, in Washington, D.C., the Justice Department announced today it's setting up a new task force to combat transnational human smuggling and break up the network, says NPR's Ryan Lucas reports.
Attorney General Merrick Garland announced the new effort, dubbed Joint Task Force Alpha, in a memo to U.S. attorneys and other department leaders. Garland says transnational human smuggling and trafficking networks pose a serious criminal threat to the U.S. and a severe danger to migrants. The new task force aims to counter that threat by investigating and prosecuting those who smuggle migrants into the U.S. The task force will pull together federal prosecutors from Arizona, California, and Texas, as well as investigators from the FBI, the DEA, and the Department of Homeland Security. The department will also seek to boost assistance to its counterparts in Mexico, Guatemala, El Salvador, and Honduras. Ryan Lucas, NPR News, Washington.
The FBI says it's recovered most of the $4.5 million ransom in cryptocurrency that Colonial Pipeline paid to hackers. A cyber attack last month forced Colonial to halt operations. The Food and Drug Administration has approved a controversial drug designed to slow the progression of Alzheimer's disease. But as NPR's John Hamilton reports, the FDA is also demanding more data.
The FDA okayed the drug aducanumab for patients in the early stages of Alzheimer's. It will be marketed under the trade name Aduhelm. Patients will receive the drug in monthly infusions. They will also need regular brain scans to detect a side effect, bleeding or swelling in the brain. The drug has proved highly effective at reducing the sticky plaques that build up in the brains of people with Alzheimer's, but two large studies offered conflicting evidence about whether it slows declines in memory and thinking. So, as a condition of approval, the FDA is requiring the drug's maker to conduct another study. Biogen and Eisai, the companies marketing the drug, have yet to announce how much it will cost. John Hamilton, NPR News.
This is NPR.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
A wildfire sprang into being on Passagshack Road Saturday night, about 30 miles out of Kodiak city limits. The fire had gained considerable size by Sunday evening, and firefighting aircraft and fire crews responded to control the blaze. Women's Bay Fire Department and Coast Guard Fire both deployed to the scene, and local property owners assisted in digging out a fire line to protect their land. No structures had been destroyed as of Sunday evening, and the fire has mostly burned through underdeveloped marsh and meadows. Immediate estimates of the fire size were not available, but it appeared to have burned through several hundred meters of terrain. Roy Moore, Assistant Fire Chief for Base Kodiak, said the aerial support was a great help.
We had air attack that was our eyes in the sky from Kenai. We also had an air tanker. They did two drops for us, which helped tremendously. We've got one engine, one tender, one brush truck, a command vehicle, and then some excavators and backhoes to help contain it.
The task hasn't been made easier by a period of hot, dry weather for Kodiak. And while the weather's bringing people from all over the Kodiak outdoors, it's also more hospitable for wildfires. Despite the weather, Moore's outlook for the fire was optimistic. While there isn't a specific timeline for when the fire will be fully contained, he says that it's running up against natural barriers.
The terrain that it's in right now, it is slowly but surely reaching spots where it can no longer burn. So it's burning itself out in a lot of the places, but our handline crews are putting out the hot spots where there's still vegetation to burn.
The local fire crews were expecting relief from the state fire team this morning. On a narrow 4-3 vote, the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly passed a budget last week. The budget hot points concerned funding for Kodiak College, nonprofits, new assessing software, facilities maintenance called R&R, or renewal and replacement, and of course the possibility of a mill rate increase, which did not sit well with Assemblymember Amy Williams.
I love that we're funding the college. I love that we're funding the nonprofits. I do see why R&R is important. The only hiccup I see is the mill rate increase. And I think that we can provide good government and fund our individual departments appropriately without the mill rate increase.
The approved budget includes a higher allocation of $100,000 to Kodiak College, up from $50,000 last year, in order to fund college programs for lower-income students. Kodiak College Director Jaselyn Keyes provided testimony about how such investment helped her.
Someone saw something in me and gave me a scholarship to go to college, and that's how I got out. That $500 changed my stars. And I've spent my professional career and my volunteer career trying to create opportunities so that other kids could change their stars.
Also included was the restoration of $170,000 in nonprofit funding, which had been shrinking in over the past few years. Some assembly members, such as Julie Cavanaugh, objected to this funding at the expense of other borough services.
Some of these decisions are kind of funding preferences that are taking precedence over general services that we are supposed to provide the public. And that's a little bit bothersome to me.
The $8.1 million general fund budget approved for next year is a slight decrease from this year's $8.8 million budget. In the end, no area-wide property tax increase was needed, even though assembly members Dwayne Dvorak and Jeff Smith were ready to entertain that option. Property taxes have held steady in the borough since 2013, as assessed values have doubled since 2004. The Assembly is hopeful that the state will reimburse at least 50% of the bond debt payment, which the Assembly plans to plug into the budget later, as Assemblymember Scott Arndt explained.
If we get more, we've obligated another by what was passed 2 weeks ago, another $634,845 to the Kodiak Island Borough School District. We've obligated that. But that still leaves a major amount of money for potential R&R.
In all, the entire borough budget, including education, health, debt, solid waste, and all the service districts, will amount to $43 million. Today is Walter Harper Day, honoring the mountaineer and guide who was the first person to summit Denali's highest peak. Alaskans are celebrating the day with work on a new statue of Harper and a special episode of Molly of Denali, the TV show.
This is the second annual Walter Harper Day, passed into legislation in April 2020. Senator Click Bishop, who sponsored the bill, said Walter Harper left an indelible mark on Alaska history when at the age of 20 became the first person to stand atop a summit of Denali on June 7, 1913. Alaska historian Dr. Mary Erlander stumbled onto Harper's story when researching Hudson Stuck, the English immigrant, cowboy, and Episcopal archdeacon of the Yukon. But it was Harper's story, she thought, that needed more telling.
I thought, this is a spectacular story. People need to know about him. Every school kid should learn about Walter Harper.
She wrote the book, Walter Harper, Alaska Native Son, published in 2017. Erlander was the director of Arctic and Northern Studies at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. In 1913, co-leaders Hudson Stuck and Harry Karstens put together the team of Robert Tatum, Walter Harper, who was Stuck's Athabascan assistant and guide, and two 15-year-olds, John Fredson and Isaias George. It took about 3 months to get from Fairbanks to the top. Fredson and George maintained the base camp for 4 weeks while the expedition team summited Denali. It was Stuck who thought that an Athabascan should be the first to step on the taller southern summit. A group of Alaskans has formed the Walter Harper Project. They have a website, walterharper.org, and are taking donations there to help erect a statue. Earlier this spring, Doyon Limited put $25,000 in the pot. Spokesperson Sarah Obed says that's because Native history matters.
We really hope to educate the public about Walter Harper and his accomplishments and his life. We view his leadership as something to emulate.
Obed says Doyon has also offered a home for the statue near the Chena River.
It's a prominent landmark here in Fairbanks and homeland of the Athabascan people, and it'll be a really great place for community members and tourists and visitors to learn about this part of our history.
The committee has selected Gary Lee Price to design the Walter Harper statue, which is scheduled for unveiling a year from now on Walter Harper Day 2022.
And we wanted to convey that energy and enthusiasm and love of life and love of nature that Walter had.
Those also inspired a special one-hour episode of the children's animated series Molly of Denali, airing today on PBS Kids.
We've been learning a ton about mountain climbing.
We want to show you we're ready for Denali.
Erlander says it's not just the summiting of Denali that makes Harper remarkable, but his complement of subsistence skills and character traits.
Here's a guy who is universally admirable, whom every Alaskan could feel proud of.
Harper was only 25 when he and his wife, Frances Wells, died on the steamer Princess Sophia when it ran aground in Lynn Canal in 1918. The couple were on their way to the lower 48 so Harper could attend medical school. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
Fishermen will still drift net Upper Cook Inlet's federal waters this summer, but it may be their last season there after the body that manages the fishery moved to close it to commercial fishing late last year. First, the amended plan has to be approved by the feds. NOAA Fisheries is now asking for public comment on the proposal through July. Robert Ruffner with the Alaska Salmon Alliance asked the Kenai City Council this week to again oppose the closure of the fishery.
The real ask that we have here is that we make some meaningful comments from our local communities to this particular issue.
The North Pacific Fishery Management Council sets policy in Alaska's federal waters. Last December, the council voted to close part of Cook Inlet to commercial salmon fishing, an area that starts 3 miles offshore and extends from the southern tip of Kalgan Island to Anchor Point. Those waters had been managed by the state, but the United Cook Inlet Drift Association, a commercial fishing advocacy group, disputed that management in a lawsuit several years ago, asking the feds to have some oversight. The council debated several management options, but when the state said it wouldn't manage the fishery jointly with the feds, it opted to close the federal waters fishery entirely. The state waters portion would remain open. Local leaders and municipalities, including the city of Kenai, testified about the economic harm the closure could have on their communities. Commercial fishing advocates say the closure's the final nail in the coffin for a fishery that's already on its last legs. Ruffner encouraged the city council to read through the fishery council's decision.
A little teaser for you maybe is that part of their analysis was that in order to close the fishery, they had to have no significant impact on the communities.
In its analysis, the Fishery Management Council says it considered the economic impacts of the change but determined communities were dependent on other fisheries as well, like the state waters just off the coast. The closure might lead to some, quote, redistribution of benefits, unquote, the report said, which could offset impacts to those communities. Kenai City Council member Tia Winger says she doesn't agree with that analysis.
As a business owner, one thing I found with commercial fishing, owning a restaurant, when they had a rough year, we had a rough year. So I don't too agree with their findings on the lack of impact.
Fishermen will still be out in that part of the inlet this summer. It takes the federal government a long time to pass regulations like a fishery management plan, often a year or more. Next, the amended management plan is headed to the desk of the U.S. Secretary of Commerce for approval. Ruffner says he thinks there's a chance the secretary looks at the record of comments and decides not to approve the decision. It has happened in the past, although it's not particularly common. U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan was in Taiwan this weekend with two of his Democratic colleagues from the Armed Services Committee. Formosa TV News said the senators announced the U.S. will be sending Taiwan 750,000 doses of COVID-19 vaccines.
On Sunday morning, President Tsai Ing-wen received U.S. Senators Tammy Duckworth, Dan Sullivan, and Christopher Coons.
The vaccine donation is part of 25 million doses the Biden administration announced last week that it is distributing worldwide. During their three-hour visit, Sullivan recalled deploying to the region as a Marine 25 years ago. Sullivan also noted that Taiwan sent 10 million face masks to the U.S. in the early parts of the pandemic. Now he says this is love from America in return. The University of Alaska Anchorage has announced a new partnership with the University of Oregon to expand opportunities for current and future students interested in law degrees. Qualified students in Alaska who meet certain academic requirements will be guaranteed admission to the Willamette College of Law's JD program under the partnership, Alaska News Source reported Sunday. Students admitted to the program will also receive $10,000 of renewable scholarships for every year they're enrolled and remain in good standing in Willamette College of Law, university officials said. The program is also offered at the University of Alaska Southeast. A federal magistrate on Friday declined to order house arrest for a far-right internet troll charged in the January 6th riot at the U.S. Capitol after court officials raised concerns about his recent encounters with police officers in Arizona. U.S. Magistrate Judge G. Michael Harvey warned Tim Bakalaska Geonet that he acted dangerously and, quote, came close to committing crimes, unquote, while he videotaped himself arguing with a drunken friend and calling the police twice. But the magistrate ultimately concluded that Geonet didn't violate any conditions of his pretrial release. Geonet grew up in Anchorage and has grown well known in right-wing politics through his social media appearances.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by
GCI. GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. This year's salmon season could be a big one. More after this.
This radio is brought to you by Alaska Boats and Permits in Homer, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, online at alaskaboat.com.
Alaska's salmon harvest for 2021 is projected to be a big one. State managers are forecasting a statewide catch topping 190 million salmon, 61% higher than last year's take of just over 118 million fish. The boost this year is due to an expected surge of those hard-to-predict pinks. In its report that gives forecasts for this year and reviews the 2020 season, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game provides breakdowns for all species by region. Projected catches for 2021 and comparisons to last year include a harvest of 46.6 million sockeye salmon, a 203,000 fish increase. A catch of 3.8 million cohos would be 1.4 million higher. For chums, 15.3 million would be 6.7 million more fish. A harvest of 296,000 Chinook salmon would be a boost of 4,000, and for pinks, a haul of just over 124 million is a 63.5 million fish increase, nearly 49% higher. Bristol Bay is again expected to rule the day with a harvest of 36.3 million reds. At Southeast, the total all species take is projected at 40.2 million fish. Prince William Sound's total salmon harvest calls for nearly 60 million fish, of which nearly 55 million are pinks. Upper Cook Inlet fishermen are projected to take just over 2 million salmon this summer, including 1.6 million sockeyes. Kodiak fishermen are expected to haul in 25.6 million salmon. Fishermen at the South Alaska Peninsula could have an excellent humpy haul of nearly 13 million. All indications point to strong demand for lower supplies of wild salmon. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the seventh day of June, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 5:11, won't set again until 11:06 this evening, giving us 17 hours and 54 minutes of daylight. That is a gain of 1 minute and 57 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record low for this date was set in 35, set in 1938, and our record high was 73, set in 1983. Both of those records are safe. It's 54 degrees right now here in Kodiak. Very pleasant day outside. These sunny skies are supposed to go on all day, but look for increasing clouds tonight. The low around 49, west wind 15 miles per hour. Rain tomorrow, mainly after 7 a.m. High near 52 tomorrow with southwest wind 15 miles per hour. Turning to the southeast, going to 20 miles per hour tomorrow afternoon. They could gust as high as 25. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up here on the east side at 1:40 this afternoon. That will be a 6.1-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 6:49 this afternoon of 2.3 feet. Our next high tide will be at 1:03 a.m. and be 8.5 feet. And our low tide for tomorrow morning here on the east side will be at 7:57 a.m. and be minus 0.3 feet. Over on the west side, you have a high tide coming up at 1:55 p.m., 11.5 feet, followed by a low tide at 7:38 p.m. of 3 feet. Your next high tide will be at 1:32 a.m. and be 13.3 feet. And your low tide for tomorrow morning on the west side will be at 8:17 a.m. and be minus 1/2 foot. Mariners, here's your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A front will move into the western Gulf Tuesday afternoon. As a result, we're looking at small craft advisory through Tuesday for Marmot Island, Sitkan, Kodiak's east side offshore. For today, northwest wind to 30 knots and seas to 7 feet. For tomorrow, look for south winds to 30 knots and seas to 7 feet. over in the Shelikof and Kodiak's west side. Small craft advisory through tonight. West wind to 25 knots tonight and seas to 6 feet. For tomorrow, southeast wind to 20 knots, seas 6 feet. Chiniac and Marmot Bays both have small craft advisories through Tuesday. In Chiniac Bay, northwest wind to 10 knots right now and seas to 3 feet. For tomorrow, south wind to 15 knots. We'll turn to the southeast and go to 25 knots tomorrow afternoon. Seas building to 7 feet tomorrow afternoon. Up in Marmot Bay, west wind to 20 knots right now and seas to 3 feet. For tomorrow, southeast 15, increasing to 25 knots tomorrow afternoon. Seas building to 9 feet in Marmot Bay tomorrow afternoon. Looking at our local meetings coming up for the Kodiak Island Borough. Tonight, the Consolidation Committee is having a meeting. That's happening at 6 p.m. in the Assembly Chambers. Tomorrow night, the Fire Protection Area Number 1 are having their regular board meeting. That's happening at 6 p.m. in the Bayside Fire Hall. On Wednesday, the Planning and Zoning Commission is having a work session. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. in the Assembly Chambers. On Thursday, the Borough Assembly is having their work session. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. in the Bayside Fire Hall. And next Wednesday, the June 16th, another Planning and Zoning Commission regular meeting. That's happening Wednesday, the 16th, 6:30 p.m. in the Assembly Chambers. The Kodiak City Council will hold a work session tomorrow night at 7:30 p.m. in the Kodiak Public Library's multi-purpose room. The meeting is open to the public and will be broadcast right here on KMXT 100.1 FM. It'll also be web-streamed from the city's website, where you can find that link as well as agendas and meeting packets. If you have more information that you need to have, call the city clerk at 486-8636. The Kodiak City Council will have a regular meeting on Thursday. That's happening in the Kodiak Public Library's multi-purpose room as well, also at 7:30 p.m. The meeting is open to the public and will be broadcast here on KMXT, web streamed from the city's website, where you can find the link, agendas, and meeting packets. CANA, Alaska Sea Grant, and the Shunack Tribe of Kodiak are strongly advising against eating personally harvested shellfish in the Kodiak region at this time, currently seeing elevated levels of toxins. Paralytic shellfish poisoning, or PSP toxins, increase dramatically in summer months and remain through the fall in the Kodiak region. This is due to naturally occurring toxic phytoplankton that bloom in the warm water. All bivalve shellfish, including clams, cockles, and mussels, as well as predatory snails and the digestive tissues of crab, can accumulate PSP toxins. People are at risk from eating personally harvested, untested shellfish. And remember, PSP toxins cannot be removed by cooking, freezing, or soaking the shellfish. Early symptoms of PSP include tingling, numbness, and nausea, and can progress rapidly to respiratory distress. If you feel any of these symptoms after eating untested shellfish, call 911 or go to your local clinic immediately. And of course, commercially harvested shellfish are regulated and safe for consumption. For more information, contact Grace at 486-1316 or Julie at 486-1514. Reading colors your world, and you can sign up for the Kodiak Public Library Summer Reading Program. All ages are welcome to participate and earn prizes. You can sign up for Beanstack to log your reading, earn prizes, and get involved. Just check it out at kodiak.beanstack.org. For more information, call the library at 486-8686. And have you heard the buzz? Kodiak Public Library is hosting a community beekeeping project. Watch a live hive check every Tuesday at 11 a.m., so that's tomorrow. Call to reserve a spot outside with the beekeeper, or watch from inside from behind safety of glass. For more information, contact Ani at 486-8683. And are you looking for a job? The library is a great place to start your job search, with resources for discovering new career paths, creating a resume, and finding local job opportunities. The Alaska Department of Labor offers several weekly workshops, such as creating effective resumes or interviewing strategies. The library can help you with your job search. The library is open from 10 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. Monday through Thursday, and from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Friday and Saturday. For more information about any of this stuff, call the Kodiak Public Library at 486-8686.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 1, date issued 10 a.m. on June 6th. There will be a 57-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Tuesday, June 8th, until 9 p.m. Thursday, June 10th, in the following areas. In the Cape Alatak, Humpy Dead Man, Alatak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alatak District. There will be a 33-hour commercial salmon fishing period in the Northwest Kodiak District from noon Wednesday, June 9th, until 9 p.m. Thursday, June 10th. The following areas will open to commercial salmon fishing at noon Tuesday, June 8th, and remain open until further notice. The Inner Katoy Bay, Outer Katoy Bay, Duck Bay, and Nisua Bay sections of the Afognak District, the Fowl Bay Special Harvest Area, and the Waterfall Bay Special Harvest Area. Fishermen are reminded that in the Kodiak area, including the mainland district, beginning at noon Tuesday, June 8th, until further notice, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse and gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Closed waters are reduced in the following locations: in Fowl Bay to the stream terminus at Hidden Lake Creek, stream number 251406, in Waterfall Bay to the stream terminus at Little Waterfall Creek, stream number 251822, into the stream terminus at Big Waterfall Creek, stream number 251821, and in Katoy Bay to the fishing game markers located at Little Katoy and Big Katoy Bays near stream numbers 252323 and 252324. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart in detail in Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations. And statistical charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour record-a-phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day. Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.